This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Rolling along as we continue our look at the NFL and college this weekend. And Monday Night Football tonight, the Jets taking on the Chargers. The Jets last in the league or near last in the league in passing yards per game, but the Chargers worst pass defense in the NFL. Something's got to give on that one.
It'll be the Chargers.
I'm pumping. I'm going to pump your team up.
Go for it, Tony. I just know realities.
Jets have won three in a row. They're now 4-3. Chargers 3-4. Who is everybody now? Joshua Palmer is out, but
he's
out. Is everybody else healthy?
Yeah, pretty much. I think.
Okay, good. That wasn't always the case.
No, it's never the case.
Right.
I mean, Joshua Palmer's out. Mike Williams obviously is out. But yeah, everyone else is supposed to be good to go. I think Justin Herbert, even though there's no injury designation, will still have like that, be protecting the finger.
Yeah.
But he's at least taking snaps under center now.
So I was talking earlier about this, about the kind of the bigger games last night. And I want to go back to Kansas City and Miami. Again, I'm not trying to rip the Dolphins here. I like the Dolphins, but there really is it is okay to say, I don't really trust you against really good teams. That game was winnable. That game was winnable.
It was.
They were down 21-0 and they came back and they got two touchdowns in the third quarter. And I remember going, okay, cool, game on. A game I thought was done. Chiefs don't give up 21-point leads. But they got that to 21-14 in the third, and I said, game on. And then they both could not score in the fourth quarter. By the way, that fumble lateral thing, that was kind of fun.
That was awesome. I gotta
say, that was fun. That was really cool. That was really awesome.
But it felt like something was missing in that game.
Right.
Like all the hype. I mean, I wasn't expecting, a Chiefs-Rams scenario where it's just – or what the Texans and Buccaneers gave us, where it was just back and forth – defense doesn't matter. Let's just put as many points up on the board as we can. But I expected more out of the Dolphins. And I don't know if Waddle getting hurt.
That might have played.
Second play of the game, third play of the game or something. If him getting hurt was kind of a catalyst of things to come. But he's remained in the game and he's still effective.
Made in the game. There were moments where he didn't look like he was hurt.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill just seemed non-existent.
It was the Chiefs' defense played a very big role in this, and they're going to play a bigger role. This is not the same old Chiefs explosive offense. They just aren't. That's just the way it is. Like, there's a reality now settling in that Kansas City is going to win different ways now. And that doesn't mean they're not Super Bowl favorites or, but it's going to be different. Look, we saw it with the Patriots, right? There were moments where the Patriots defense were the main reasons they won Super Bowls. And then there were years where the offense was explosive and that's how they won Super Bowls, right? But they've done it, but they did it over two decades. This window of time that the Chiefs have been in our lives, where they are a championship level team, they've been hosting every champion AFC title game since Mahomes became the starting quarterback in his second year. All through that, they're gonna have to find a way to have different identities. And this identity is, we are good enough, but then we're going to have a defense that's going to be better than you think. And their offense, like you saw it last week against Denver, it was really sloppy. And I know Patrick Mahomes had the flu, and I get that, but that's not really an excuse for a 5-turnover puke upon yourself game. But again, this game was also they weren't that explosive. They really had two offensive touchdowns. They were shut out in the second half. Their defense got a scoop and score. The Dolphins were capable of getting back into this. They just couldn't. And it does make me question this excellent team that's built really strong, if they can go out and win a game that matters. Like, the Ravens right now are no joke. I mean, the Ravens right now are playing the best football in the conference right now. But you can make a case that maybe Cincinnati is playing the best football in the conference right now. And you know this league. It really matters how you're playing right now. And next week, it'll be right now. And then 3 weeks from now, it'll be right now. When we get to the playoffs, it'll be right now. This is not a league that where you take the cumulative of the season and that's your definitiveness, right? You can lose 5 games to start the season but be red hot going into the playoffs. You can be really hot, like 11-0, like the Steelers were a couple of years ago, and falter and sputter and blow up on yourself against Cleveland in the postseason. It is always a snapshot of where you are today, not accumulation of your wins and losses. The cumulative wins and losses has everything to do with your standings and your fight for the postseason. That's what matters. This is not an eye test league like it is in college football. What you have to do is win games so you put yourself in position for the playoffs, but late in the season is how you are playing right this very second. The Baltimore Ravens are playing the best football in the AFC right now. Cincinnati's playing very, very good football. Kansas City's playing okay football but winning some games. Miami's playing good football but not winning games against teams. And the Bills, I have no idea how the Bills are going to be week in and week out. That's the crazy thing about the Bills, is I'm not really sure about them. And so when you're talking about the upper echelons of teams in the, you know, and here's the other thing. Here's a team I didn't even mention. Jacksonville. Is that not the quietest five-game win streak we've ever seen? I bet you if you went around people who are following the league and asked them who has one of the longest, I don't know if it's the longest winning streak because I've got to think it is because I know the Eagles just lost a couple of weeks ago. They're 7-1.
It's the longest.
It's the longest. It's five games.
Yeah, we have, another one is Minnesota at four in
at
a row.
Four, right.
And then the Ravens have won four in a row. Those are the next two.
So if you went around, just find random NFL fans, said who has the longest win streak in the NFL, you might get, oh, I guess Philadelphia, maybe Cincinnati, but you would be wrong. It'd be Jacksonville. And I don't think anybody would know that.
Or even know which teams they beat.
Yeah,
to get there.
Exactly. And that's the thing about this is that would you trust Jacksonville in a world of a Ravens, a Bengals, a Chiefs, a Dolphins? Like, would you trust them in that group? Would you invite them to that party? I'm not sure I would.
No.
And that's terrible for a team that's 6-2 that should be in the party, but I don't know.
You know what I did this morning? I was prepping for the show getting the crust out of my eyes, let's be real. I decided to say, I want to see the standings. I want to see the playoff standings.
Right.
It's kind of eye-popping because, I mean, the top seven in the AFC, I mean, some of them are the ones we thought would be there, but then there's some that, I mean, I know it's still early, but the entire AFC North is in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's funny. The entire AFC North is in, and the Steelers are number five.
Number five. And the Bengals are 7.
My brother rubs it in pretty deeply. He called me yesterday and he goes, what do you want from this season? And I said, well, I want this team to make the playoffs. He goes, but they stink. I go, well, their offense stinks. Let's be clear. Their offense is terrible.
But Tony,
they're not good.
You're four games away from another 500, over 500 season.
I know.
From Tomlin.
I know.
In a year crazy, where for you, and it was a year that was like, there's not a chance.
Right.
No chance. This is the year that Tomlin does not get 500 wins or 500
points. The weird thing about the Steelers is they're 5-3. They have been outgained by every single opponent they've played. The opposing team has gotten more yardage than they have, and the point differential is like minus 30.
What was, I think there was, the NFL Network put up a stat, not including this last game. I don't know what this last game was because I saw it last week, but it was if all the scores, because Steelers have a lot of one-score games.
Right.
If all the scores went the other way, I think the Steelers were 0-7.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
That's crazy.
That is crazy. Yep. Pretty bad. But you know what's funny about Tomlin? Is that if you asked him how it is, you would get just nonstop cliches. That's all he delivers. He's always in order to play hard, you got to be hard. In order to think things through, you got to be smart. You got to play football smart. You got to play hard. You got to play with heart. Heart, a big factor is heart. It's never like, well, strategically, we moved the left tackle to the right side. We moved Broderick Jones over a little bit. That's really helped our run game from that side of the thing. It's never that. It's just, just want it.
That's just what actors do.
Yeah.
Actors do that all the time. I mean, he was brilliant on House.
Sure was. That's how you do it.
Just, he's just reciting lines that he probably said in the various TV shows and movies.
That's right.
That he was in.
Yeah. Omar Epps, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They are separated at birth, by the way.
They are.
Not a chance.
That's exactly
that they're
right.
not.
Exactly.
But no, I mean, but the AFC is not gone according to what we thought it was, because
it's, I hope it's not disappointing, but it really has, it really turned into what this elite level, like there are two teams, obviously Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. I think the Chargers have just, they were supposed to be in that group and they weren't in that group.
And hopefully now they're turning it around. I'm going to keep giving them a hard time until they're back in the top seven, you know, flirting up there. But right now I can't. I mean, in the AFC, they're 13th out of 16 teams. Nah, that's unacceptable.
The 16th team in the AFC is the Patriots. The Patriots. Somebody threw out a rumor yesterday that the Washington Commanders might be Belichick's next stop.
I saw that, too.
Yeah. You see that?
Come on. Why would he go there?
Yeah, well, his dad coached Navy.
Well, I know, but they just got rid of the defensive pieces that he would probably want to have.
I know,
they
probably would want to have there.
Which, by the way, the Bears extended Sweat.
They did, exactly like we said he was. That's just like, who's our guest that said that last week? Because I said, there's no way you would trade for a guy unless you knew you could sign him, right?
Yeah.
You would not give up draft picks for a player on a lost season unless you knew you could get a deal. He's like, exactly. That's the only way it happens. That's exactly right. The Bears knew way ahead of time that if we can get Montez Sweat, he'll sign a deal. And that's exactly what happened.
What he did.
They got Montez Sweat, and he signed an extension with them.
Crazy. So
that's how all that behind-the-scenes stuff works. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, your thoughts on the NFL, college football as well, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So I've got a question about the national media and whether or not, no pun intended, if they have gotten a wake-up call. But before we do that, you know the holidays are coming. We are now in that mode, Ron, where we've got lights going up. People are jumping right in. Forget Thanksgiving for right now. They are all in on the Christmas season. I saw 5 or 6 Christmas commercials already. They like couldn't wait to break them out. So if you're still looking for some amazing gifts, I've got something for you. Total Wine & More is one of my favorite places to shop for friends and family. They got so many great bottles to choose from. Like, I found gifts for everyone on my list. A Cabernet for my sister, champagne for a coworker. If you need some help, you can ask one of their friendly guides for advice. Like Dave at My Total Wine recommended a single barrel bourbon that I know my dad is going to love. With the lowest prices for over 30 years, you'll always find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Spirits are not sold in Virginia and North Carolina, and also drink responsibly. B21. All right. I am going to ask a question I really want to dive into because I think I know the answer, but I don't know yet. Do you think the national media has woken up and said, you know, I think we went a little overboard on that Deion Sanders thing? On Saturday, they lost to Oregon. Not only did they lose to Oregon, but Oregon scored a touchdown just before halftime, and it was set up because Colorado ran 3 of the dumbest plays at the end of a game you could possibly do. And Oregon State went down the field after getting the ball with plenty of time when Colorado should have just ran the clock out. They were down 7-3, and they went in the locker room down 14-3. And I started seeing real criticism from the same people that have been pumping up this hire since the second he got to Boulder. The announcers for the game on ESPN, they weren't Mark Jones and Lewis Riddick wearing the sunglasses and saying Coach Prime every 2 seconds. They were two guys that literally said, this is not good. This was terrible decisions. This is bad. This is a really, really bad thing. This is a really ridiculous football strategy. I'm wondering if the tide is turning a little bit. Is the national media waking up that maybe they went a little overboard because prime, you know, Deion Sanders prime time, that persona is very attractive. It sells a lot of viewers. It brings a lot of eyeballs to the product. But right now, this is a okay football team that's got a lot more wins than last year with a complete roster, and that's about it. There's nothing more special going on in Boulder. This isn't a miraculous turnaround. In fact, let's be honest. And I know there's a lot of Deion hate, and I'm not trying to be part of that group because, man, some of the Deion hate is silly. Because I think it's, and I do think for some people it's personal, and I don't know why. But I will say that I have been very careful for it because I know how these stories go, right? Everyone jumps in, everyone swims in the pool, but we have done this time and time again with athletes, coaches, anybody of prominence, a singer, an actor, anybody that's new and doing something unique and doing something interesting. We will turn on you quickly if you get too much, if we get you too much. The worst thing that can happen to an American Idol contestant is win the competition and then immediately be thrust in every television ad and every special and everything. Because then America goes, yeah, it was cute. But golly, man, I don't need you on my TV every 2 seconds. I know it was attractive for people to be a part of what Colorado had done. The uniqueness of hiring a guy like Deion Sanders, who came into the program more famous than anybody that he will ever bring in to play at Colorado. That's a unique thing, right? Like, you get coaches, they've worked their way up through the system. You know, some of them were players, but not big-time players. They just realized at a young age, you know what, I got a brain for this. I just may not have the athletic ability for this, but I will be a coach. I will go into coaching. Now, sometimes you get a guy like Mike Gundy, for example, who was a quarterback at Oklahoma State, and now he is the coach at Oklahoma State. Right. Sometimes you get something like that. But when you talk about coaches, it is guys that have toiled and toiled and toiled and toiled. They're 21. They're washing uniforms, but they get to be in the meetings. They're packing bags, but they get to be in the conversations. They're, you know, assistant coach to the secondary, but they get to put a game plan together. They're part of the process. They're learning as part of the process. So they're working their way up a ladder that's very, very complex and very, very loaded. When they do separate themselves, they have done so and go on to somewhere else. Most of the people at that school or in that region do not know who that person is. They may know, oh, I heard of him. I heard he's doing good things at Louisiana Monroe, or he's doing really good things at Colorado State. But we don't live in that area, so I'll have to look him up, right? Deion Sanders is a Hall of Famer. Deion Sanders is a huge personality. He's been that way since the late 80s. So he's going to be more famous than anybody that ever plays for that school. No, there is going to be, even if you have a Heisman Trophy winner, he's not going to be more famous than the coach. So it was natural for people to wrap themselves around it. But I always went back to the idea of, this is a really tough schedule, guys. Look at this schedule. This schedule is loaded with ranked teams. How are they going to navigate through this? Even if they start looking good, a bump on the road here or there, and this is going to fall apart. And that's exactly what's happened. They are unlikely to go to a bowl game. It's not impossible, but it's unlikely that they're going to go to a bowl game. They still have to play a very good Arizona team that's giving everybody fits. They have to play Utah, and they have to play Washington. Those are the games that are left on their schedule. So they've got 4 wins. It is very unlikely that they're going to get 2 more in the rest of their way. Washington State. They have to play Washington State. They're unlikely to get 2 wins out of those. Now, they could, but I don't know. Now, is it a success? Of course this season is a success. It's one of the most important seasons in Colorado Buffalo's history, next to winning a national title in 1990. It's the money that has flowed into that program, the attention that has flowed into that program has been unparalleled. But the reality of it is, and I've asked this question a number of times, is he a good coach? And everyone gets asked this, and what is it they say immediately? Yeah, Deion, he can recruit. That's a recruiter's job. That's a recruiter element to it. It's similar if I said, going back to the golf analogy, is he a good putter? And somebody said, oh yeah, he can drive it 300 yards down the middle. That's not what I asked. Can he putt? Same thing here. Can he coach? Oh, I know he can recruit. Good Lord. He is a natural-born salesman. He was one of those guys. He's got one of those personalities. If he wasn't athletic, meaning he would be one of the top sellers of any company ever. He's got that kind of winning personality. People love being around him. They love his smile. They love being associated with him. He makes you feel important, all of that. My question has always been, is he a good coach? Not throwing out players out on the field. Not throwing out talent and just seeing if it works out. And that's been my takeaway from Colorado. And I'm just wondering if the national media is starting to realize this isn't a story anymore. We did it early, but it's not a story anymore. Because I saw a lot of attention going in the opposite direction. Now, I honestly, to be honest, I again, if you walk down the middle of the road in sports media, you're going to get squashed. It's always better to be on one side or the other. But my thing with Deion Sanders, and this is where I make an exception, is I feel like the two sides of the road were too extreme for me, and I didn't like it. So if I get squashed by the bus, I'll get squashed by the bus for being in the middle of the road. Even though, again, in this business, you don't want to be in the middle of the road. But I couldn't do the coach prime and prime time and look at the prime and prime's all prime and it's too much prime and you can't handle the prime. I couldn't do that. I hated that. It was disgusting. I thought people in our business that did that were selling themselves out. But I can't do what the critics are doing. Guys like Jason Whitlock who are like, everybody's worshiping him like a god. He's nothing. He's coaching malpractice. No, I can't do that either. The two extremes of Deion were too extreme for me. I really hated both sides. It bothered me when Joe Testosor was literally spitting out this prime narrative constantly. Almost too much was disgusting. Mark Jones did it almost to a point where he was rooting for Colorado. It was awful. But at the same time, the critics have felt like there's something larger than this. It's something bigger than this. There's something I have to stamp out. Society has gone awry because they worship Deion Sanders or they like Deion Sanders too much. It's the crumbling of the American culture. Like, it's silly. Nonsense. This guy's an athlete, now he's a coach. He's one of the biggest personalities in the game. But you know what? They're 4-5. That's three more wins than last year. Why can't it just be a building block to something long-term? Why can't it just be lessons are being learned here? This is how it's going to be. And by the way, when they go to the Big 12, they'll probably be really, really good in a conference that's gotten a lot weaker than this Pac-12 that's disappearing. But I'm wondering if the narrative is switching now where we were a little too crazy and now not so much anymore.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. I am I'm going to start. I have to say there's one trend in American pop culture that needs to come to an end because the time has passed. It's not worth the headache. What I'm saying is it's not worth the headache even if the intention is awesome and the attention is good. And this is going out to Jeff Darlington of ESPN. Darlington did this one other time, and he suffered the wrath on Twitter, and then he decided to play the card again, and he suffered the wrath on Twitter. It's time to retire this phrase, because it's just not going well. It's no matter how you try, it's not going well. Now, do I think that he tried to rile up Twitter by doing it a second time? Yes, because it was so bad the first time he used it. I also saw Shane Battier use this one other time. Here was the tweet that Jeff Darlington posted out. He was in Germany for the game, and this is what he posted this at halftime. A mere history lesson here in Germany should provide the Dolphins all the hope they need in the second half. After all, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Well, here came the flood of people who poured on Twitter to remind Jeff Darlington that the Germans did not bomb Pearl Harbor. And, of course, if you don't know, he's referencing Animal House, right? The famous line of, should we tell him? No, let him roll. He's rolling, right? Now, here's the problem. Animal House came out in what, 1977?
Maybe it's closer to 78?
I thought it was like 79. Late 70s. Whatever, late 70s. Yeah, we're talking about a movie that's 45 years old. Oh, close to 50 years old.
God, does that hurt.
Close to 50 years old.
Yeah.
So again, this would be, if you grew up in the 80s, this would be like somebody putting on a 1930s reference, right? And if you were in the 90s, it would be like somebody putting out something in the 1940s.
Yeah.
Right? A movie from the 40s. Like if somebody in the 1990s was quoting like Casablanca or something, right? Like, and you would go,
Wizard
what?
Of Oz.
Wizard of Oz or something like that, right? That's how long the reference is. That's how, like, 45 years connection between the two is insane, right? But it's very funny, right? It's funny. But it's explaining that to another generation is a waste of time.
And I think part of the problem is that's the generation that really occupies the space
right.
that he's tweeting
right.
it
occupies
out
the space. Exactly. 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 So you're not going to get the bang for your buck. And then, again, I get it. Jeff Darlington was kidding. Not kidding from the first time he did it was years ago, and he got so destroyed, and he kept going, guys. Like, he was getting support, too. Like, people going, we got you, Jeff. We got you.
Yeah.
I understand this. And but the amount of young people that did not understand what the reference was so overwhelming. So I know he was trolling on this one. He wanted to start it up again because he got famously barbecued the first time he did it. So, but it didn't help. It didn't help. People still jumped all over him as a crazy history lesson. But it's kind of sad because in a way, one of the funnier speeches in movie history is now lost on a generation that didn't watch the movie.
Of course.
It doesn't really care.
Or a movie that it probably doesn't have the same feelings because it was almost risque for you and I to watch it.
Sure, sure.
And we can look back on it and go, man, you know, this was teetering along that line. But now it's not.
But here's the deal. It's about, you know, fraternities. There was nudity in the movie. There was sexual stuff in the movie. Like, it's not a movie fathers would go to their sons and go, yeah, hey, Animal House. You need to watch Animal House. He almost rapes that underage girl.
Yep.
Like, that's not a movie you would.
There was a great scam.
Share. Yeah.
You know, like, when he picked up the girl.
Exactly. Like,
did he have three friends?
it's not a movie you pass on to somebody. You know, like, I'll give you an example. I am a Casablanca fan. It's my favorite movie of all time. I remember when my son was old enough and I said, you want to watch this? I said, I'm going to be honest with you. You may not like it. I said, but if you want to watch it, it's my favorite movie. And he watched it. And he said, this is a great movie. It's not maybe not my favorite movie. It's a really great movie. I understand why you like it. But I'm not doing that with Animal House. Animal House is something you have to watch on your own. If you watch it all. I'm not going to be the one.
You have to discover yourself.
You got to watch it on your own. Me and my son are going to sit down and watch Porky's because we had a good, like, because I had a good time smuggling it out of the video store when I was 15, right? You know, so it's not one of those movies you pass down. You know, it's not Wizard of Oz. Like, I remember watching Wizard of Oz on TV since I was a kid. You know, always show up on like CBS.
It was always during Halloween too.
Right. Yeah. It was always, like, awesome. It was Halloween, you know, Wizard of Oz is on. It wasn't Star Wars. You know, it's not those movies that, you know, you take your kid and you show them. So it's now you're trusting a young generation to find a movie from the 70s, even if they've heard about it, they got to watch it. And they're probably like, I got 100 other things. I'm going to go watch your movie from the, I'm not going to watch your frat movie from the 70s.
Yeah, but now I want to.
You know, but my, these kids today, man, what, like a risque movie like Porky's and like that is
that's mild
amateur hour for what?
Mild.
It's such an awful world now. It's like,
yeah, because all we saw was Top.
That's right. I know it is. So Jeff Darlington, good try again. I give you all the effort in the world, man. I really do.
Try again next year.
Keep trying. Keep trying.
If
might get them. You might turn them.
What? How bad would it be if they did a remake of Animal House?
That's a good question.
I mean, because now you can push the envelope even further.
I guess you could push the envelope even further, but would the writing have to be a little bit more?
I mean, you'd have to change it up.
The women were like, all the guys were just trying to take advantage of situations.
Yeah.
Could you have to alter that now?
Maybe in this new world, it's the opposite. Maybe it's sororities taking advantage of fraternity guys.
Maybe so. Maybe they're trying to get the fraternity guys drunk. I don't know. But to me, it's one of those, it's almost like being an old man in the town and you watch the old general store being turned down for a Walmart and you go, It's not going to be the same anymore. Once I start seeing these cultural references going away, once I start seeing these things go,
it was like I brought up to you during the break.
Turn around.
Yeah. I brought up to you during the break. I'm seeing this thing. It says you might be a Gen X if, right? And it listed, there's 25 things listed on there. Only thing I've never done on this list was had a MySpace account.
Yeah.
And then you and I started talking about Facebook.
Yeah.
It's an our generation thing or older.
It's not a young person's thing.
It's not.
Really weird. Like if you notice, like, well, some people do, I guess, but like the young people have got these other things I'm not even using.
My oldest has never once asked, "Hey, Dad, can I create a Facebook account?" Yeah. No, he wants to create an Instagram account.
Instagram.
He has an Instagram. He has a Twitter because he uses it for putting his name out there for baseball. But Snapchat, I mean, he lives on Snap.
It's a place where you want to go where you don't want your parents there. You don't want your grandparents there.
Yeah.
You don't want your great aunts there. You don't want old people there. Like, it's not, you want to post some fun, like, you want to post a fun picture of you at a party without some great aunt going, "You should get more sleep." Like, no.
Like, for me, I never post anything, but my wife does all the time. And because she uses it as a blog to keep in touch with relatives, I'm like, great. You know,
sure.
that way they're in touch with our lives. The only people who ever respond are our peers.
Right.
You know, peers or older relatives. It's never a 14-year-old going, "Hey, look what I did."
Right, exactly.
You know, it's never that.
Exactly. You know, so ever-changing world. There are movies like I always hate this part of the generation where there's movies or TV shows that I loved a lot, and when I shared them with my kids, they just didn't click. You know what I mean? Like, it just didn't. They just went, no. I remember when Disney Plus came out. I couldn't wait to watch Tron. Remember the original Tron with Jeff Bridges?
Yes.
The 1981, 82 movie. My son was like, "This is so outdated." Like, and
it's probably the worst graphics ever.
Exactly. It's like, oh.
Except, you know what? Hey, I've watched it recently. The bike scene.
Yeah.
I forget what they were called. It still works.
Still works.
That one still works.
Still great.
Some of the other things are, what was the other one I watched? No, it was Tron as well. Like the big square.
Yeah, they came after them and whatnot. Yeah,
exactly. But square soldiers or whatever they are.
So again, Animal House references, old, I don't know, Indiana Jones lines, I guess, are all they're all falling on deaf ears, everybody. So as jokes, you're making some jokes, great, but know that there's a generation that wants to think you're a dummy if you think the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. So, even if you know what the reference is,
yep,
you still find it funny 45 years later. It's a generation that don't care about you anymore. All right, more on football. We'll look at the Monday night game tonight, Chargers, Jets. I'll also go through some of, again, this was a crazy weekend of stories in the NFL. And we'll get back to the Raiders, too, because I still find that really fascinating. When we come back, it's Wake Up Call.
Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so we've got a breaking news. Daniel Jones is out for the rest of the year. Tore his ACL in that game against the Raiders. Daniel Jones, we hardly knew you. Once you signed that contract, here come the flood of injuries on Daniel Jones, who barely played this season.
I never would have thought Saquon Barkley would have outlasted Daniel Jones.
Exactly.
And I mean,
$40 million a year, and they can't use him.
And Barkley's, you know, he hasn't played a full season yet. But
right,
he's going, all things considered, God bearing, willing, he'll play more games this year than Daniel Jones.
Yeah. And without question. So Tommy DeVito is now the quarterback.
Probably will be named your Week 10 starter, right?
Tommy DeVito played at Syracuse in Illinois, in case you were wondering where the heck he came from. But he was also the name of Joe Pesci's character in Goodfellas.
That's why it sounds familiar.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's where it sounds familiar. Now, just to give you a little mob history, because I'm really good at that, Tommy DeVito in Goodfellas, played by Joe Pesci, is really Tommy DeSimone, the real gangster of that era, of Henry Hill's life, but they changed some of the names. So Joe Pesci played Tommy DeVito. So there you go. So Tommy DeVito, Goodfellas gangster, starting quarterback of the Giants. There you go.
More than likely. Hasn't been named official yet, but.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, when you go off of this weekend, I mean, Daniel Jones was out. Tommy DeVito was the backup. Tyrod Taylor was the only one also on the depth chart who was on IR.
You see, it was revenge for Billy Betts.
Yep. And then I was telling you during the break.
Tommy getting made, we were all excited. We thought we were all being made. But in order to be made, you had to be 100% Sicilian. They had to trace your roots all the way back to the old country. Jimmy and I could never be made because we were only half Italian. Yeah, Tommy DeVito. Met his end getting lured into a room and shot in the face. His mother had to give him a closed casket. Yeah, Goodfellas. That's a great movie. That's a movie that still holds up.
That does.
You still watch that. You know, yeah. So do you think Tommy DeVito can go around asking like Saquon Barkley, "How the heck am I funny?" Do you think he can do that?
How many times has he been asked if he's related to Danny?
Right. Exactly. They're from both from New Jersey.
It's not a popular last name, is it?
Yeah, it might be.
Might be.
Yeah.
I don't know too many DeVitos.
When I hear DeVito, I think of Danny.
Yeah.
Obviously.
True.
You know, so that's true. But I don't know. Like I'm with you. I don't meet a lot of DeVitos, but. I don't know. Nevertheless, but Tommy DeVito is your quarterback for the New York Giants going forward. But you said Matt Barkley was on the roster too?
Yeah.
They would rather go with Tommy DeVito than Matt Barkley? Really? Maybe they see something in camp. I don't know. What happened to Matt Barkley? He's doing that thing too. He's bouncing around.
Yeah, he might get elevated up, but I'm assuming since he's on the roster but he wasn't on the depth chart that he's practice. He's a practice team member. Which is amazing to me that's Matt Barkley.
So do you think let's go to the same game where Daniel Jones got hurt. Do you think now the Raiders do something a little different than teams that have interim head coaches? They actually sustain this? Or do you think it's just all excitement, all the energy, all the we are so thrilled, and then we come crashing back down to earth? I kind of think it's the latter. I think the Raiders are all right. But I don't think they're great. You know, I think it's a fun story that Antonio Pierce is now the head coach and they won their game. I'm not looking for a playoff Raiders now. And if I get it, great. I guess.
Nah, I don't think.
Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, I don't think you get a playoff Raiders. You could get a Raiders team that finishes third.
Yeah.
In the AFC West.
Antonio Pierce, this is the problem with being an interim coach, right? Is that we talk about this a lot. Sometimes you're good enough where they go, you're the guy. But a lot of times what you are, you're most likely out the door too, right? Most likely you're out the door because you are going to be, you're part B of the continuation of the issue, right? But sometimes there's been plenty of interim coaches who've turned it into successful jobs. But sometimes you want a clean house as an owner. You want to be like, everybody that was associated with what just happened, I'm going to get a new coach. But here's the great thing. Because if Rich Bisaccia couldn't win the job, then Antonio Pierce is going to have to do something extra great. Now, we had Vinny Bonsignor from Las Vegas, and he brought that Rich Bisaccia myth down a little bit. He said, look, that team did win games under Rich Bisaccia, but they won games barely. That was not a change in philosophy, they just squeaked out a number of games, and before you know it, they were in the playoffs.
And honestly, Antonio Pierce seems like, you know, he's that next newcomer coach.
Right.
Like the guy, the guy's name who you're going to start seeing floating around, like, you know, kind of like the Byron Leftwich or I'm blanking on D'Amico Ryans. You know, just names of guys who've been playing. You've heard about them for years and, you know, finally getting that opportunity.
Well, you know what it is, too? It's guys that interview for jobs, even if they don't get jobs. They start becoming in the news, right? Where you go, okay, this guy is like, this is about the time of the year where the media is going to tell you about coordinators that are the next up and coming coaches. We've had 9 weeks of the season now, and you're going to start seeing some names of, hey, guys, pay attention to so-and-so. Pay attention to so-and-so. They're doing really great work. They're the offensive coordinator of this team. They're the defensive coordinator on this team. They're really good. They're the next up and comers. So when you start hearing that, then that's kind of what you're hoping for. D'Amico Ryans was number 1A on people's wish list for fan bases that wanted a coach. Why? Because we got to, one, we kept hearing about how he was going to be the next thing. He was going to be the next person that was going to interview for jobs. And what happened was the Niners became so good, he got more prominence, and it led to people going, okay, great, when he is up for it, that's when we want it. Denver wanted him, couldn't get him. Houston wanted him and did get him. Right? And then there's ones where you go, shoot, didn't see that one coming. I totally forgot Kevin O'Connell was the coach of the Vikings all last year.
Yep.
It wasn't until late when I'm like, hey, the Vikings are good. And by the way, don't they have a first-year coach I barely know? Yes, they do. It was Kevin O'Connell. Right? Same thing here. Like, you might start – Antonio Pierce is going to have to take this opportunity and run with it and be like, look, I'm going to do some really good things in Vegas that if they want a clean house – right, if they want to clean me out because I'm part of the old regime, I get it. But I'm also going to do good enough things where my agent is going to start hearing from teams that are looking for a head coach, and my name may be on a short list of guys they want to interview for that job. And that might be the case if he does a good enough job. But I will tell you, stories like we got this weekend certainly help his cause, doesn't it? When teams are rallying around you because they like you, they rally around you because you are going to start doing some things a lot differently. Like, how in the world did the team that was 31st in rushing all of a sudden start opening up with Josh Jacobs in their win against the Giants? And I know the Giants are terrible. I get it. Like, try doing that against the Chiefs, all right? Try doing that against some other teams in the NFL. I understand. But the Raiders were a team that couldn't score. They didn't score more than 21 points in any game this season. They made dumb decisions. Right, they made weird, bizarre Josh McDaniels mistakes, but they did not do that. They scored 3 touchdowns in the first like 3 or 4 drives in the game against the Giants, and Jacobs had 2 rushing touchdowns. Like, this was a team, this was one of the worst rushing teams in the NFL, and he went back to the running game. So if you start winning the locker room where the Raiders players go to Mark Davis and say, that's the guy we want. If you want us to be enthusiastic about being here, that's the guy you want. We want. Because you run the risk of bringing a coach that might do the same thing, and we might treat him the same way as Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels went from a player's guy that they loved to a guy that players hated in a very short amount of time. Because you've got to win. And not only win, but you've got to utilize the talent around you and stop making dumb decisions. And this is one of the reasons why I went on that rant a while back. We're done with Patriot guys because they can't let the Patriots go. It's so part of their identity. And I don't know if it's because they're afraid that if they do let it go, they won't be anything without it. Meaning I better cling on to this Patriots thing. It's one of the main reasons I'm here to begin with. But that story that Jay Glazer told, if that is indeed true, that Antonio Pierce is saying positive things about the Giants being the Patriots in the Super Bowl and Josh McDaniels lost his mind, that's 1A as to why you need a guy that can separate his career. He can say, I'm now part of this. I was part of that. And while it's awesome that I got a lot of hardware from being part of that, I'm now on this. I'm not trying to protect 2 legacies. I'm not trying to protect my own and the Patriots. And that's always the case with every single one of those guys when they get hired. They're trying to protect themselves, but they're also trying to remind people why they were hired in this job in the first place by protecting their legacy with New England. And that's where this backfired. Antonio Pierce is not trying to do any of that, and the players responded to him. I have no idea where it goes after this because I've seen these interim coaches win their first game and then they're done. But maybe the Raiders are clicking onto some. If they win their next game, they're at 500 and very much in the conversation as we head down to the final 2 months of the season. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Glad you can be with us on a Football Monday.